Hey, 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 closet busters and bold move makers. It is time once again for Life Uncloset. So I want you to gather around because it is time once again to kick down those closet doors of your life. We're here to escape our BS, explore our fears, and elevate our self-expression. I'm your host, Rick Clemons. I'm the bold move expert and that coming out guy who's going to take you to the party, the pulpit, the wake, and back to the party of living your life uncloset. So come on along with me and grab hold of yourself and get ready to step out, step up, and step into facing your fears, making your bold moves, and living life without apologies. Now let's get to the show. Hello, Life Uncloseted family. Here we are once again, another fun episode of delving in, figuring out why everybody hides in closets of their lives and why they should be comfortable, feeling safe to be who they are in the world. But we do have a segment of our community, our beautiful and lovely transgender, gender nonconforming, all those people that like people don't get us. And it's not that hard to get, but because they don't get us, they don't have a voice. They aren't seen. They're not heard. Even for all the work that's being done, I'm not saying it's completely like, yeah, they don't get anything. Okay, they're starting to, but they're being seen and heard in all the wrong ways. You can't turn on most news stories these days without seeing someone losing their life, or this bill of rights against the trans and this against the trans, and you know, all these different things. And why wouldn't I do a show about this? And I hesitated because it almost makes me want to choke up that we are here. Because if you are part of our LGBTQ community, if they're attacking the trans, they're attacking all of us. And it's coming backwards. It's coming backwards our way. And the sooner we let voices for transgender equality part of the conversation, the sooner we all get to continue to be part of the conversation. And today we're talking to TJ Billard. They have written a book called Voices for Transgender Equality. You notice how I segued that in there really early there. And I feel like this is a beautiful conversation that they are bringing to why it matters. They are assistant professor of communication at Northwestern University, as well as the executive director for the Center for Applied Transgender Studies. And what better person to have talk about the voices and the challenges and the things that we all need to be more aware of. I'm a gay guy, but I need to be aware of what's happening to my transgender family. And if I'm not paying attention, I'll be the next. I will be the next person they're coming after. So I'm really glad to have TJ here today, and welcome to the Life Uncloseted podcast, TJ. And thank you for writing this book and putting it out there in the world. It's such a needed resource right now.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. So let's start with why this is important for you, being someone who identifies as they, them. There's got to be a correlation in here that all these things you did. I mean, my gosh, your resume. I'm like, I'm exhausted just reading everything. But why was this important for you to go, I think this needs to get written?
Yeah. I mean, when I started my kind of adult life, I was kind of coming of age at a time that trans rights seemed like things were just starting to get public attention that was positive. Political gains were just beginning. I moved to Washington, D.C. to go to undergrad, and it was during the Obama years. And so everything was like, things aren't yet good, but there's like kind of some optimism. And then over, you know, the 8 years that Obama was president, there was like a lot of progress, particularly in federal policy around trans rights. And so things felt kind of optimistic, and I very much was like animated by hope as I entered life as an activist. And the kind of biggest domain for me that it seemed like things were not improving in the same way at the same rate was media. And so I kind of started off my career just focusing on how does the media talk about trans people, and how does that kind of affect the rights and kind of progress towards equality that the trans community does or doesn't experience. And I kind of realized I wasn't a very good activist, but was a better academic. And so I kind of focused all of my energies on that. But when it seemed, you know, particularly like 2016, we have, you know, HB2 happening in North Carolina, where Pat McCrory signs into law this massive bill saying that trans people have to use public facilities associated with their kind of gender identity as listed on their original unamended birth certificate, and watching all of these copycat bills and this like first big mobilization on the right, I was like, oh, cool. No, like this is not a time of hopeful progress. That progress has gotten attention we didn't want and has really leading us down a new path that, you know, very much was exemplified during the Trump administration. And so this book focuses on those first 2 years of the Trump administration, where I, in my own research, pivoted. And it's like, let's stop talking about media per se and start thinking more expansively about the way our society and culture thinks and talks about trans people. And what is it that trans people do and can do in a coordinated, organized way to meaningfully transform what it means to be trans in our society? Because, you know, positive media depictions are great. You know, cool, you watch Transparent and now you have empathy for a trans person, but that's not the same thing as changing some of the kind of deeper social conversations that shape the way that people in everyday life think about trans people, much less the way that our kind of society kind of demands that the state treat trans people. And so I think for me, that focus on communication in a very expansive way, and that focus also on what trans people who are not fictional, but who are in fact real people with real material circumstances to their life and deep subjective experiences worth sharing, were doing was really important.
Well, I think that's the thing. It's important to be sharing, and you can't share without having a voice. And so much of the voice has come through the lens of, oh, the pedophilia, they're, you know, the grooming, all these sort of things that happen. And then the bathroom bills, as you brought up, and everything. And the bathroom bill always just really gets me. It's like, okay, so you want this person to go into the bathroom who represents their original genitalia, even though they look like a man or a woman in their current truth of who they are.
Yeah.
Have you all thought through this? Have you really thought through this? You know,
yeah.
It's
I
like,
mean, even if we put a pin in that, so many of the anti-trans policies that have been advocated at their base are not about what they claim to be about.
Oh, no,
right?
They're not. Not at all.
You know, restroom policies, nobody is that concerned with what's happening in a restroom because they are functional places, right, shall we say. And, you know, I very much think the same thing about things like youth sports and the panic over fairness in youth sport, where, you know, we can have conversations about the Olympics and elite competitive athletics, where even that, the science does not say what transphobes say it does. But
right,
even if we, whatever, ignore that, when we're talking about elementary, middle, and high school athletics, we're a hyper-competitive culture, but like that's not why people are playing sports. Like, I really want to make sure I can go in and just destroy strangers, right? The point is that you want to participate in social life. You want to have friends. You want to have activities to do with those friends. You want to have something that gives structure and meaning to your connection to other people. And the efforts to ban trans youth from sports isn't about, well, this, you know, 11th grade running race won't be fair, right? The point is,
right,
we don't want trans people to be part of society, and we want to find all the places that we can kind of logic our way with, you know, some fudging of the facts to saying, well, trans people just shouldn't be part of these various institutions and practices that give shape to our social life. And that's kind of always what it's been about. Starting with bathroom bills and bringing us all the way up to, you know, bans on trans healthcare that are like, great, if we take away the healthcare, maybe trans people just won't exist. And that is like terrifying in its own right, but it's also quite insidious for the ways that it can kind of convince people that maybe this is just about a rational discussion of, you know, things that might make us uncomfy, but
right,
that's never really,
but
what
that's all it
the
is.
End
that's
of it
always
is.
All it is. It makes me uncomfortable. So I need you to not be part of my part of the world. it's that, you know, you make me uncomfortable. You don't fit into my mold. You don't show up in the way I define what, you know, a man should look like or what a woman should look like. And the bottom line is who the fuck is checking the genitalia? That's what I, you know, I guess, well, yeah. Now they do. Okay, so let's go there. The athletic thing is causing them to do that, which is just crazy. But hey, we're also where they're saying an embryo is a child. So, you know, whatever. But we have so many interesting things populating our planet these days. But as you have worked through this and you've done the research and you brought these things, you know, to the forefront and, you know, in your book, what is the core thing that you are wanting people to start sort of, I'm going to just say, wake up to? What is it that mm-hmm. you want them to wake up to that can really have an impact in the world?
I mean, I think what is really evident from a lot of the research that I did and that I think comes through in a lot of the stories that I tell from my time in the field is that a lot of the same tactics that we think of as the things that make positive social change are the exact same things that are being done to advocate for regressive social change. The tactics that are being used by trans activists are the same things in you know, with different contents, but the same tactics being used by the Alliance Defending Freedom and all these various far-right groups. And so the tools that we think of as inherently change-making are actually the battleground itself. And so I think it's crucial that we think about, okay, what does it take strategically for us to look at what our current communication system looks like and find the places where we can just basically outmaneuver anti-trans advocates? Because if we cede any ground in any way, shape, or form, that will have meaningful long-term consequences for, yes, the movement in general, but really the everyday lives of members of the community. And, you know, I think it is illustrated very clearly in a lot of the kind of stories that I tell from that time. You know, I was doing this research during the first 2 years of the Trump administration, which was, you know, kind of peak crazy hours in Washington, D.C. And, you know, the story that opens the book is the day that Donald Trump dismissed 15,000 trans people from the U.S. military by tweet. The kind of fights that ended up unfolding were really, yes, fights over hearts and minds, but also at the end of the day, fights over the livelihoods of people, right? The fight, you know, regardless of what you think about militaries, whether you're pro, con, whatever, like it was an attempt to set a precedent for discrimination in federal hiring against trans people, and it cost 15,000 trans people their salaries, their healthcare, yeah, like everything. Yeah. And I think what kind of comes away from this is that communication is the battleground, and that it is not inherently something that is doing good in the world, and that it's also not just talk. It has real material consequences in the world that we need to care about.
But it's also the misinformation that is causing so much of this too. And I know Absolutely. You talk a lot about that because it's, you know, I have lots of friends on from all different walks of life. And one of the things that's always so interesting, in fact, I had a recent conversation with one friend who is a woman of faith. And she goes, well, you know, God doesn't make any mistakes. And she was referring to the trans and the non-binary. And so, you know, God didn't make a mistake with them. And I'm like, I don't think they say he made a mistake. In fact, I would say that most trans individuals would not consider themselves a mistake. They just consider themselves another version of what God beautifully made. And then I said that, she's like, well, I can't go with that philosophy. I said, so you're going to say this is the only way they can exist is that they're an anomaly, but you're going to say God didn't make a mistake. She didn't know what to do with that. Cause I'm like, yeah, you can't, you got to be one or the other. You got to say it's a mistake or they're mistaken about who they are. But if they're mistaken about who they are, then guess what? If everybody's made in God's image, then they were made to believe that there was a mistake made in that. And right. I got her so flustered that she didn't know what to do.
I mean, I think what's kind of important about what you're saying, you know, you said misinformation and then you pivot to that story that is fundamentally really about worldview. And I think that that's what's really key, because I do think people frequently think, oh, well, misinformation is about if people have good information, people will think differently. And misinformation isn't effective because you've convinced people of the facticity of what you've said. Misinformation is effective when it supports a deeper narrative understanding of the world that that jives with your experience of the world. And I think that for trans people and trans acceptance in particular, it has had quite a disorienting effect on a lot of people who feel that their understanding of the social rules of the world have been challenged by trans identity and trans acceptance. What it means to be a man or a woman is changed, what it means to have a gender, what it means for all of the ways that our society is structured by gender in hyper-visible and sometimes, you know, somewhat invisible ways. And it is easier sometimes to accept misinformation because what it does is that it fits into a narrative that says to you, no, the world is not changing in ways that scare you and you need to get used to this new normal. Instead, what's happening is there is a threat to the an order you need to protect. And that is fundamentally emotional. It's not intellectual. And I think that's also why communication that is, again, not about, you know, fact checking, but really about telling deep, meaningful, subjective stories about what trans life is like and what trans people's experiences are like, are effective, because they play into what is actually at the root causes of a lot of people's transphobia, which is this sometimes quite existential fear over what accepting trans people would do to their understanding of the world.
Well, or even their value system of the world, or any of
Yeah, especially all the more so with something like religion that is so deeply held. Yeah.
But one of the things that I brought up in that conversation is, so what is your fear about, you know, individuals that come out as trans? Well, you know, they're too young to figure this out. And I just wanted to say, okay, so how many news, you know, right-wing news media have you been listening to? Because guess what? Somebody who's, okay, there is a piece of me that I get this, that if it's not explored properly, which I don't know if anybody who has a medical degree, a psychology degree that works in this field is ever going to say, oh yeah, at 4 years old, we just took Tommy by his word and turned him into, you know, Tina. We just took him at his word. This is not what happens. And see, they don't want to go. They want to hear the misinformation piece. We're mutilating, genital mutilation. We're, you know, taking children before they're too young. Da, 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 da. They don't want to understand. There's a process here, folks.
Yeah, there's a lot of factual misunderstanding about what transition means for all people, but especially for youth. But it's also, I do think, a little bit deeper than that, even in the sense that it plays into a lot of ideas that we have just about children in general, and the fact that children inherently cannot have self-knowledge. Also ideas about fear of fluid identity in general, and the idea that like you all must be moving from one static identity to another static identity, and it is a failure if you move around in that space and don't go linear, right? It's like linear is correct, and so if you're wobbling around, you're wrong. And I think that that's where a lot of that kind of anxiety and existential worldview stuff comes in, where it's like sometimes people don't even necessarily realize what it is that makes them so uncomfortable with it. And so, you know, the factual misunderstandings about what transition for youth looks like leads people, you know, it provides support for people's kind of bigger arguments of like, well, no, the trans kids are too young to know. And they're not too young to know for a variety of reasons, but including, you know, as a friend kind of quipped to me once quite darkly, like, if they're old enough to kill themselves, they're old enough to know they need to transition, right? Yep. There's not uncertainty there. And it's important that we provide resources for not just to say, sure, the end goal of transition, but to provide resources for people to explore and to learn and to understand as young people. But the efforts are not around that. The efforts are to ban books from schools that acknowledge that trans people even exist. Because again, it's about that social exclusion. They don't want trans kids to be certain and be certain before they transition. They just want them to not transition.
One of the most interesting conversations I ever had around this, and it's been a few years ago that somebody was pushing my buttons around this. I'm like, okay, I'm going to try not to get pissed off. I'm going to try to like stay in the lane. And we had just been to Las Vegas and stayed at the Luxor Hotel. And we took advantage of the spa and the really cool adult pool and everything that's kind of tucked away and hidden in the Luxor Hotel. And you have to pay a little extra to get there. But so this person's going on and on about, you know, there is no feeling like you're more feminine or masculine or any of this. I'm like, really? And so I just kept kind of listening. And I said, you know, that's kind of interesting because I was just at the Luxor and we spent some time in the spa. And I said, I always found it really interesting that these guys would come into the spa. They were definitely not gay men. They definitely were not gay. But there was something about as soon as they put on that luxurious little spa robe, those butch masculine guys suddenly had like just a sexy little swagger because that robe. And I said, and it wasn't just one. I noticed this like with 5, 6, 7 other guys that came in. Of course, I also noticed that some of those guys were like, oh, this is just the men's only side. And they immediately were ready to be naked, right? And there was always like this interesting little thing that happened. Again, not all of them, but it's like it's something as simple as putting on a very luxurious robe changes the sensibility of I can kind of drop my facade here, right?
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is if everybody really understood, and I'm no scientist, so I'm going to admit that, but if we really understood our DNA and the X and Y chromosome thing really well, there's nobody that's 100% anything. Let's just, you know, it's how we manifest it. Right. And how we feel and how we act in the body and the persona that we are. That's what you show up as.
Well, yeah, and I think especially with gender, one of the things that's so complicated about gender is it's something that is both deeply interior and personal, but also something that is so externally structured and performed for other people, right? We have this conversation where we talk about things like toxic masculinity and the idea of like, oh, you know, men can't cry in public, all these other types of things, or that anger is the acceptable channel for insecurity, or all of these different types of things. Those are all rooted in many ways in the clash between the internal and the external. And so much of the focus on trans people is a discomfort with the external rules of gender, of what is allowed to be, that I also think are simultaneously reflecting very internal struggles with those same rules. It is in some ways I'm bound by these rules that make my life hard, and everyone else should be too. Because I think you're right, at the end of the day, no, you know, cis, straight, masculine man has ever experienced a feminine luxury and not gone, oh, this is kind of nice. I just don't want people to know I did it, right? Like I used my girlfriend's cherry blossom hand cream and I feel great about myself. I just want nobody else to know that I let, you know, skincare touch my my skin. And I think that so much of this is quite rightly rooted in like, people are uncomfortable with trans people because they draw into relief how much their own lives are uncomfortably constrained by what is allowed per the social rules of gender. And people don't know what to do with having that kind of facade cracked like that.
Yep. Well, and that's what it is. The facade is cracking.
Yeah.
You're letting some, I mean, I know as a gay man at 19, I let the facade crack, but it wasn't strong enough to quote stay cracked open. So I put the facade back on, continued to live in that facade until I was 36, until I was like, okay, the facade is cracked open and it isn't ever going to be put back together like Humpty Dumpty. It's never happening again.
Yeah.
And these are scary things for all of us. When we discover who we are, we're excited by it, but then it's like, okay, but one of the first things we often think is, well, what will somebody else think if I really showed them who I am, right?
And being confronted with the existential question of, oh, I've always thought of myself as a man or a woman. I've never actually given it thought. The idea of putting that under a microscope, even if the answer stays the same, it might be a scary process to figure out, why am I a man? I have no idea, right? And I think for a lot of people, the idea of needing to even open that box of exploring their own relationship to gender beyond, I don't know, this is just what I am and what I've always been, and these are the rules, I think that that does scare a lot of people.
Well, it's scary to go, oh, I'm outside of the norm.
Yeah.
You know, even you in your they, them, it's outside of the norm. And I'm quite sure as you began to like really lean into that, there had to be some moments of, you know, unsure and, okay, how am I going to be here? Even though you were very excited by, hey, this is me feeling more in my own skin and more in my own reality. There's nothing simple about any of this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because it also requires so much an investigation of, okay, why do I feel this way? And then especially if you feel wrong about yourself in some way, trying to deconstruct that, okay, but why do I feel wrong, and needing to evaluate for yourself whether or not you accept those rules or not, like, and then to, you know, set yourself in a position sometimes where you're like, okay, I know I'm just gonna have to be at odds with this forever, because I can't you know, plan that just everyone's gonna wake up tomorrow and have changed their mind about the way the world works. And I, you know, but I do think it's not just scary for people who, like me, had to kind of come to understand that, okay, I actually don't fit in this set of rules that exist. I think it's oftentimes scary for people who even still will at the end of it, but realizing that they are rules and realizing that they are making the choice to abide them, and it isn't just something natural and inherent and they don't need to think about, I think is a lot, you know. It's like very Truman Show, you know, you're realizing that, oh, I'm actually performing right now. Before I just thought I was. And I think that scares people.
Well, and anytime we're scared, we step back in to those quote childlike places of, I just want to feel safe. I just want to be safe. And it's a human trait. Safety is a, you know, when I work with people and like, okay, what's something that's most important to you? Nobody's ever going to say, I just want to feel safe. But they say lots of things that are about, I want to feel safe. That's all I want.
Totally.
And it's such a shame, DJ, and I know I'm preaching to the choir right now, that anyone who is in the space of transgender, and there's a lot of different layers in that comment, in the space of gender nonconforming and all these different things, but especially in that realm, LGB, I'm going to say we have our own stuff, but out of the entire LGBTQ plus population, transgender, gender nonconforming, gender fluid are just saying, can I please feel safe? Yes, I'm a gay man. I want to feel safe too. But my battle is a little bit different at this stage of society.
Yeah.
Slowly being wanting to dial back, obviously. But in our own community, I see this all the time too. It's like, okay, well, why do they have to be under our flag? And da da da. Why can't we just? I'm like, because stop the bullshit, folks. It's the same fight. It may be a different thing for them than it was for me as a gay man, but it's the same fight. They're just saying, I want to feel safe. I want to be able to be freely who I am.
Right.
And that's end of statement.
Yeah. And I think that's where, you know, in some ways where kind of historically trans activism is in a slightly different place than gay and lesbian activism in large part, because it also learned a lot of lessons from things that were done wrong in the past. But where a lot of, you know, gay and lesbian activism was very much focused on, I want to feel safe. And that means by doing so, by, you know, trying to like, okay, we make sure that our media depictions show us as like good people, right? We have good jobs and we have good relationships and all of our stuff is like good and nice. And I think trans activism is in many ways telling a slightly different story where it's like, I want to feel safe. And that means instead of convincing you, oh, okay, I can do all the things that you want me to do, it's been very much saying, like, I would like you to give me permission to not do all of those things and not be afraid that that is going to kind of cost me greatly, whether that's, you know, to cost you livelihood, to cost you physical safety. And I think that it's so much tied up too in so many different forms of permission that are required for trans people. Because it's not just, I want to feel safe that, yes, I want to be able to walk down the street and think violence won't happen to me, but also, but like, I want to feel safe because I know that if I need a certain type of healthcare, it will be there. If I need these other types of things that are, you know, so much of what it means to be trans in the world is dependent on external power structures that go beyond just, you know, living authentically. Like, living authentically is great, but there are so many other institutions and actors who have power over whether or not you can live authentically beyond just acceptance. And I think that is so, does set the T part of the acronym apart in terms of what this fight looks like. And I also think that kind of to your point about this is at the end of the day all one fight, I do think that that is being made especially clear right now when we look, for example, at drag bans and moral panics about drag queen story hour, where the Christian right, the far right, is in particular trying to capitalize on public ignorance and misapprehensions to animate anti-trans sentiment into also being more broadly anti-queer sentiment by trying to blur the lines, which are already blurred within the community, but to blur the lines outside of the community between what does it mean to be trans and to do drag, and what does it mean to do drag at a nightclub versus to do drag for elementary schoolers, and to try to create this kind of monstrous public construction of what that is, to basically say all of these things that are demonizing about trans people are in fact the whole acronym, and there is no escaping and saying, oh, you know, I'm a cis gay person and I don't really understand the trans thing, and so none of it matters to me. And it's like, it should matter to you.
It should.
Because for the people who are anti-trans, there is no difference, and they are going out of their way to convince the public that there is no difference, and to use the kind of enmity that the that certain segments of the public currently have towards trans people to undo much of the progress in LGBTQ plus rights generally, because they don't think they're gonna overturn marriage equality, but they do think they can demonize gay people, you know.
But the people who are like, well, I'm not trans, so it really doesn't have any bearing on me, will be the first to fight. Well, but if somebody who says, well, I'm not gay, so, you know, gay marriage rights doesn't mean anything to me, they'd be the first to go fight that in a heartbeat. Because it's the same concept. It's all, and I'm not going to say I completely understand. I'm never going to, you know, I am blessed to get to do these kind of shows and have these conversations. I learn every day. I have transgender friends. I have people in my life that are in the gender nonconforming space. I ask questions. I get curious. I say, help me better understand. The same way I would, like, you know, when BLM became such a movement, I went to many of my Black friends and said, hey, you know, I can understand your plight to a small degree. I'm in a marginalized community myself, but guess what? I can walk down the street. Nobody knows I'm gay. I'm a cis white gender gay guy. Nobody's going to know that other piece of me unless I say something about it. So yes, I can relate to a point, very small point in many of these ways, but I would be remiss as a person, as a human in my own mind, this is just me speaking for me, but even more so as somebody who is somewhat well-known in our LGBTQ community for doing the podcasts and the books and everything. I would be very remiss if I didn't have these conversations and tried not only to help myself understand better, but to help the world understand better. Because voices that are silent create voices that say they deserve to be silent. It's that simple.
Well, and I think, you know, to say that you need to fully understand someone experience to understand the importance of protecting them, of protecting their rights, you know, that's not really possible. And like, it never would be, right? You can understand someone at a deeper level where you understand their personhood without ever understanding from the inside, what does it feel like to be that person, right? There are so many things that are incapable for me to understand, including things that other people find entirely normal, like the desire to have children, right? Mm-hmm. I can't from the inside speak to or even imagine myself in a position of having that internal subjective experience, but I don't need to know, okay, but I do understand this person. I understand their drives and vision for their own life and to believe that that should be made possible, right? And I think that that type of understanding, you know, that's a word with many valences, understanding. Like, it doesn't mean, to understand does not mean to inhabit the same space or to be able to picture yourself doing that, but instead to understand like the basic human drives that that kind of animate somebody else's need for freedom, for equality, for in particular autonomy.
I love the ability to really communicate clearly why this is so important and to show people that a voice is a voice and every voice deserves to be seen and heard. Doesn't mean you have to agree with them. I'm not saying that, but at least open your door to humbly accepting and embracing who somebody else is, and at least give yourself the ability to go, okay, I understand a little bit better. I understand a little bit better. And I think that's the beauty of these kind of books and the work that you're doing and what you're putting out there in the world. Because TJ, quite honestly, without it, we're going to continue to be generating and raising a society who says it's okay to be a bigot. It's okay to have these feelings. And it's such powerful work that you're doing, and God bless you for doing the research, because I don't have that research bone in my body, and I couldn't do it. So,
well, thank you very much.
Interesting. So any other books on the horizon that you got coming that are, I mean, you seem to write a lot, so that's almost like duh, Rick, of course there's something else coming, but like in this realm, in this genre.
Nothing immediately. I am currently working on a book on anti-trans misinformation in the US and the United Kingdom, looking in particular at a lot of the Christian right in the US and the ostensible feminist left in the UK and their unlikely, unholy alliance together to kind of use misinformation, as we were saying earlier, as kind of a tool of narrative persuasion to kind of foment opposition to trans rights. That's probably another year or two away, but working on that and constantly writing other things, a lot of them much shorter and freer to read. If people want to follow any of that, my website is thomasjbillard.com, where you can find all of my writing available. Mm-hmm. And please do check out the work of the Center for Applied Transgender Studies that I run, which very proudly boasts about 40 of the world's kind of brightest trans academics who are all doing really interesting and important work at the intersection of research and transgender rights advocacy in a variety of different countries. And so if you're looking for information or resources on understanding trans policy better, understanding trans health better, you can go to appliedtransstudies.org and check out all of the work that all of us are doing there. Because, you know, it is very easy to get the wrong information, to get the wrong information from the wrong people. And so we're working very hard to make sure the right information is out there and freely, openly available to people.
I think that's so important to make sure that the right information is out there. It's very easy to create misinformation.
It's always free and top search result on Google.
Yep, exactly. So, well, TJ, thank you so much for sharing of yourself today. And thanks for bringing this book into being. All the links, everybody, will be on the website as well when you listen to the podcast. All you have to do is Google. I can tell you, all you have to do is Google TJ Billard, and you will get there.
I will appear.
Yeah, you will, because they are. I thought I wrote a lot back in the day when I was writing for Huffington Post and all these. I'm like, wow, I'm like, oh my gosh, I look at his circulum vitae, and I'm like, ah, I'm exhausted. I'm already exhausted by seeing everything there. So, I know you love what you do, and it shows, and it emanates from you, the power of who you are and who you want to be as a beacon of light in the world. And that's why we do these conversations, because everybody deserves to have a voice, regardless of who you are in the world. So TJ, thank you so much for being part of my world, bringing this to our listeners here at Life Uncloseted, and being a beacon of light of there is a way forward. We just got to keep pushing forward.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, 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 Life Uncloseted family. Another episode of Life Uncloseted has come to an end, and it is time for all of us to sashay away and go face our fears, make those bold moves, and stand up to living our life without apology. But before you do, I've got a favor to ask of you. Would you hop over to iTunes or Spotify or Podbean or wherever it is that you're listening to this, and just give us a little bit of love if you like what we're doing here at Life Uncloseted. Here's what it does. It helps other people find the show. It helps other people get to know what we're all about, and you just might help change life. In fact, if you really want to change a life, we'd love it if you just ask a friend to take a listen and see what they think. So that's it. Love you all deeply. I'm Rick Clemons, the host of Life Uncloseted, and never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping in to living your life uncloseted.